Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Overtown Sports Show with Mike Wood, coming to you live from the greatest city on the planet, Durham, North Carolina, on this, the second day of August 2016, back fresh off of vacation, full of vim and vigor. Ladies and gentlemen, I have an announcement to make. Lord have mercy. Thank you, thank you, thank you. The same thing that my mama said when I finally graduated from college, the best 12 years of my life. Thank you, Lordy. It's football season. Oh, man, I am so fired up right now. Can't do a darn thing about it, but I still can get fired up. Can you smell it? The heat, the electricity in the air, the fresh-cut grass. It is football season, and tonight, coming up on the show tonight, we have head coach Tim Chavis of St. Augustine's. He's going to come in and talk about this season in CIAA. And, St. Augustine's in a rebuilding type situation, and they're going to get there because I'm telling you what, coach got great things on his mind. Also, welcome tonight, co-host Linda Van Smith. She's going to be with us tonight. And we go right now, without further ado, to the Overtime Sports Show Hotline. And we're talking with Coach Tim Chavis. How are you doing this evening, coach?
Man, I'm doing great. I was getting ready to bust my head against the wall. You get me fired up, man.
I tell you what, I am pumped up. I am ready. Football is in my blood. It's the greatest sport in the world. And my dad used to ask me, my dad was a baseball player. And he, you know, when I was 5 years old, I'm throwing a baseball. And then eventually, when I got older, I started playing sandlot football around the neighborhood. Remember back in the old days, we used to play sandlot football. And the amazing thing about it was we played sandlot football with no equipment, and nobody got concussions. Nobody got put in the hospital. Nobody got broken necks. But now, if you touch somebody, well, we have to go with concussion protocol. But anyway, and it's the greatest sport in the world because I found out as time went on, you know, I can hit somebody as hard as I want to and not go to jail. You know that? That's what's great about it.
Like, you're absolutely right, man.
Right upside the head and not go to jail. Well, Coach, let's jump right into this. Recently you had your CIAA Media Day, and everybody picked where everybody's going to finish. And I noticed in the Southern Division and overall, but in the Southern Division, they picked St. Augustine's to finish in sixth place in the Southern Division. Now, I don't put much stock in stuff like that because when I used to coach and we used to sit around and talk about stuff like this, and they would always rank the teams, and they get to me and they say, well, Mike, where do you think that your team is going to finish? I said, fellas, really, I don't know about y'all. I know this. I know where we're going to finish, and I'll let you guys worry about two, three, four, and five. So, I know what I'm going to do. So, talk about your team this year. But before we get into that, tell the listening audience about you and your background that brings you and the experience that brings you to St. Augustine's.
Well, I'm going to tell you, it's a blessing to be here. I'm going on my 14th year coaching in the CIAA. I've been here at St. Augustine's University for 5 years, and it's just been a blessing. Like I said, I graduated from Bethune-Cookman, so I was a Wildcat throughout the years. I just finished in 01, so I'm pretty much that Division I AA type background type guy. So, you know, I'm going to bring those Division I players and recruit that way, you know, even though this is a Division II program. I'm very excited for the season. Like I said, for them picking me last, Mike, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm looking forward to it. That's nothing but better to find out that they picked me last. But like I said, I had a great recruiting year. I had so much support, you know, from family members down in Florida. Actually, I'm from Florida, from St. Petersburg, Florida. And, you know, a lot of guys, a lot of friends, a lot of coaches, you know, they congratulated me and also helped me with some great players to recruit this year.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, you look at the fact, I mean, you know, there's been a few problems over the years, but St. Augustine's has always managed to work their way through them. I remember last year, a year before last, I think it was, when I was at the game, because I think I was with volleyball last year, but when St. Aug would always play, you know, NCCU. And I'm telling you, people, whether you know it or not, I know everybody always says North Carolina Central, North Carolina A&T is a big rivalry, and that's the game that everybody wants to come to and everything. But I'm going to let you know something. St. Augustine's, even though the last time we played, the score did not indicate it, but in the past, St. Augustine's and NCCU has been quite a bitter rivalry. NCCU has not been able to pull away from you guys until, a couple of years ago, or last year, pull away from you guys and, quote, put you away. I mean, it's always been a brutal game, and I used to tell people that all the time when they look down the schedule, and I would say, don't y'all forget about this game right here. I'm telling you, there's always a team. It doesn't matter who it is. It could be the number 9 team in your league or the number 1 team. It doesn't make any difference who it is, but they always seem to just about have your number. No matter what you do, no matter how hard you try, there's always that one team that just, I don't know, they just, you know, they just get you. You know, they just kind of put it to you.
I'm trying to tell you, Mike, you hitting it on the head.
Yeah, and St. Augustine's one of those teams that's a bugaboo for North Carolina Central. I mean, I tell everybody all the time, you know, even whether it's St. Aug, whether it's North Carolina Central, North Carolina A&T, you take the jerseys off of Duke players when Central play them and put A&T jerseys on them, and it's going to be a war. It's just something psychological. I don't know exactly what it is, but I never figured it out because I just made up my mind when I played, I was just going to hate everybody and be done with it. But, you know, I'm not going to worry about who's got to, you know, I'm just going to hate everybody. Talk about some of the new recruits that you have bought in this year to help St. Aug get over that hump.
I'm gonna tell you, like I said, I went right home to the Sunshine State, you know, and like I said, when you go out there and compete, you know, I recruited a lot of college transfers, you know, and in this day and age, you know, having college transfers now, that's the only way you're gonna be able to survive to play teams like A&T, Central, a Carson Newman. So like I said, I just went back home and I reached out to a lot of coaches. I played junior college ball over there on the West Coast. I just reached out to a lot of junior college coaches and coaches that I knew that coached Division I and just, you know, I racked up. I think, you know, I'm bringing in 120 kids this year. I have over 35 college transfers right now. Some of my top recruits is a running back coming out of University of Miami named Walter Tucker that blocked for Duke Johnson. You know, he's coming in. He's going to be my starting fullback, you know, slash halfback. We got a lot of talent coming in that this school didn't have in the past couple of years, and that was just speed. You know, I'm bringing a lot of Florida speed here, a lot of track kids that play football that want to get on the gridiron and show their speed and show what college football was all about.
Yeah, now let me ask you a question. This is a question I've had like, you know, a little quote question about myself is it better to bring in? Yeah, no, that was oxymoron. To bring in, I know you say to survive, you have to have the junior college athlete. Okay. Do you think that is better to in the short term? Yes, you will win some games because I'm gonna tell you right now, some of the best football games I've ever seen was on the JUCO level. I mean, slobber knockers everywhere. I mean, helmets flying. I mean, I've seen some great talent because that's where the talent comes from.
Right.
So, do you think it's better to bring in kids for the short term or bring in kids to develop a process for the long term?
Well, you do both, Mike, and, you know, I wanted to explain that, too. You know, I recruit right here in my backyard. You know, like I said, the school saves money, and you'll be able to offer that kid, you know, a decent type of scholarship. So don't get me wrong. You know, out of those 120 kids, you know, maybe 60 may be from the state of North Carolina. You know, don't get me wrong, because you definitely want to mix it up. You know, you definitely want to get some freshmen in here that could definitely compete for the job. And we do have at least 60 North Carolina resident, you know, student athletes going to come in and compete for a starting position. But like I said, you know, in this day and age, you look at those rosters on Winston-Salem State, you look at those rosters on Virginia Union, you look at the rosters of the Bowie State, you know, 20 to 25 kids are just, you know, college transfers coming from a Division I program, a Division I AA program. So, you know, just like I said, you want to mix it up a little bit. But like I said, I haven't forgot about the state of North Carolina.
Well, that, I think that's very important because I actually had – I'm not going to call any names. I mentioned this before, but I'm going to say it again because it still gets up under my skin because I'm a native North Carolinian and, you know. But I had a college coach that actually wasn't from North Carolina, but, of course, they're working here in North Carolina, and they told me that they did not recruit heavily from North Carolina because North Carolina did not have the best athletes.
I disagree because, you know, I could sit up here and we could be up here all day, Mike. I can name some of the greatest athletes come out of North Carolina because, like I said, when I was at Bethune-Cookman, we had some great athletes from North Carolina. So, you know, like I said, it's vice versa. You know, it's talent all over the East Coast and the West Coast.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, you tell me, I absolutely came unglued at that particular point. I usually don't do that when people make very idiotic and stupid statements, but I had to come unglued because they were basically talking about me. I'm a North Carolina. I played here in this state. I bled here in this state. I gave everything here in this state. So I had to go and get a roster of the team that just finished beating them down. And show them a number of players that just finished beating them down, not only from
there
North Carolina, but from Raleigh and or Durham. So
yes, sir. Yes, sir.
That right.
And like I said, you know, like I said, I went when I recruited, like I said, that was the first place I went right here in my backyard. Because like I said, you know, you start a new program, you know, you want to get the community involved, you know, you definitely gotta start right here.
Yeah, and speaking of the community, one thing I can say, and if you can speak to this, I noticed you have a very loyal, and I mean absolutely rabid fan base. They believe in your football team. They believe in your school. I mean, they really do. They support and they turn out. Talk about what that means to your players and your team to see so many people just supporting you up in the stands. I mean, and they're going to hang with you. I'm telling you, they're going to hang with you. Just, you know, how does that make the guys feel?
It makes them feel great. Like I said, those guys go everywhere from Food Lion to Walmart to the cleaners to the laundromat, and there's always alumni, you know, congratulating those guys, letting them know, look, baby, are you hungry? You want a plate? We get so much support from the alumni, from these alumni Falcons. I get phone calls every day, you know, Coach, what can I do to help? And, you know, they come out here and talk to my guys, you know, almost every other day. We get great support. Like I said, it makes them play better, makes them feel loved, you know, because a lot of the kids are, you know, not from the area or just didn't have that mom, father figure back at home. And we have those type of fans. You know, we have that type of support. And like I said, you know, that Falcon country, they're all over. I mean, everywhere I go, you know, and I have on St. All gear, you know, I meet somebody every time, Mike, every time. And they're very supportive. And, I give them a business card, and they call and email, and they want to give us mouthpieces. You know, they definitely want to give back and help these guys.
And see, that's the kind of situation I like. You're a big enough organization, a big enough school on the Division II level that you can take it, quote, to the next level, to a national championship. But you're small enough that everybody knows your name. It's like you're small enough that the fans up there can say, hey, Mike, hey. I mean, they can actually have a personal one-on-one relationship with you instead of just seeing a number and hoping that hoping that they can interact with you. I mean, I know it's especially important to the young kids in the area, especially in the area around your university. Talk about how your players, and I've seen a thousand times on your website, and also I've seen it, you know, in the newspapers, work with the young people in the community. How important it is to your players to work with them?
Oh, most definitely, because, you know, they're giving back. And, you know, I just tell them, you know, even though you don't have a little brother or a little sister, you definitely want to give back, and they love that. And the kids love it. You know, they ask for us to come back to the elementary schools every day. And it makes a great relationship because the teachers and the principals, they want my players to come back to do internships. So it works, it works hand in hand. And, you know, it's just like I said, that's one, you know, Wake County Schools is another great support, you know, of me becoming the new head coach here at St. Augustine University, where they're always calling for our football team to come out, you know, come read to the kids, come talk to the kids, and the kids love it.
Now, also, the thing that I've noticed, too, I've also interviewed Coach Jones from over at Shaw University, and now I'm interviewing you over here from St. Augustine's. Some little birdie told me that there was a little rivalry between you two guys and between the two schools. Just a small rivalry. Tell me how important that rivalry is to the Falcon community.
I'm going to tell you, you know, like I said, I'm a Florida kid, and I played at Bethune-Cookman, and our big rival was FAMU. And I said this at the media day, won't we make this a nice classic? You know, the CIAA
yes.
needs a nice big mm-hmm. classic, just like the Florida classic that we always have in Orlando, Florida, you know, where it ranges out over 100,000 people. I think just us and Shaw, you know, St. Augustine's and Shaw University would be a great CIAA classic. A wonderful
yes.
classic, and you would bring, and you would generate so much money for both schools, and bring out the alumni and the community in downtown Raleigh and downtown right down here in Raleigh. You know, like I said, having a classic here, it'd be a big thing, and that's what I was trying to hint to the commissioner at the media day. Like, you know, listen, we need to get this thing on paper. I want to be one of the first coaches that mentioned that it needs to be a classic.
Now, that, you know what, I was thinking, great minds think alike. I was thinking the same thing. I said, you know, if they played this game up, holy cow, it could be.
It'll be humongous.
Huge. It would be like, and you're talking about cash on both sides, and I know that sounds bad, but ladies and gentlemen, I want you to understand something, those of you who are listening. College football is beautiful. You see these kids out here; they have the great uniforms. They represent their schools well. The bands look good. The cheerleaders look good. The field is good. But one thing that I don't think most fans understand: that costs money, and you're going to have the money to keep those things up and to move beyond where you are. Now, yeah, talent will get you far, but money will help you get more of that talent in to get further. So, yeah, you need some kind of cash cow. I don't know, maybe they could rotate it, play it in Raleigh 1 year, play it over here at Durham County Stadium, the home of Shaw, the next year, or either play it at Carter Finley, but they haven't been too friendly to, well, I'm not even going to go there. But anyway, play it somewhere like that if you really want to make it, you know, very, very big. I mean, the North Carolina Central A&T Classic used to fill that joint up. State can't even fill it up. But we used to fill it up from the top to the bottom, from the rooter to the tooter. We used to have that place full over there. But then again, they found out how they could. Anyway, I'm not going to go through that. I'm not going to do that. I am going to be quiet. But I still think that would be a great rivalry. Linda, do you have something for Coach Evans?
I do, Coach Evans. How are you this evening?
How you doing?
I'm doing fine. First of all, I'm glad to see that you place high expectations on education and the development of the mind with your team, which is fantastic because,
yes, ma'am.
As the listening audience knows, I do teach in Chapel Hill. Now, I was reading that you have been the team's academic coordinator since 2012 and also winning three consecutive awards for having the highest grade point average. And also, you say that your goal is to put a competitive team on the field who excels academically. Now, what are some
ma'am.
Of the educational strategies you're using with your team? For example, I mentioned this before, I tutored the NCCU basketball team when I was in grad school. So do you have, are there tutors available, or what are you doing that makes your team academically successful?
I'm telling you, you know, I'm old school. I'm from the South, and, you know, I was raised by my mother and my grandmother. It's pretty much, you know, it was education first and sports second. And I just kept that with me, you know, all these years. And the main thing about it is you have to use what you have on campus. And, you know, like I said, you know, we made it where we needed tutors. You know, I made tutors. You know, I got all the guys that, you know, were getting 4.0s in certain classes like algebra, trig, or anything that other kids that were struggling at, and I made those guys tutors. You know, they pretty much gave back. And then, you know, like I said, I just followed the university lead. They have a great, wonderful tutorial program here. I make it mandatory for my whole team to go. You know, I don't care if you got a 3.5 or a 3.8. Like I said, usually in study hall, I make that mandatory for the whole team. You know, we'll take up that library time, and like I said, you know, we're in there getting that work done, you know, off the field. And I make that mandatory because if you don't get those grades and stay on track to graduate, you don't play for me, period. And I let those guys and let the parents know that from day one. Right before, you know, we report to camp, I let them know exactly. If you're not doing what you're supposed to do in the classroom, on track to graduate, you can't play for me, period. And like I said, just to answer your question, you know, wrap it up, but I make it mandatory. I make two study hall mandatory. I give progress reports every 2 weeks so I can just keep track of what those guys are doing on quizzes, tests. You know, like I said, I'm pretty much more of that head coach that's hands-on when it comes to their education.
Okay, great. Now, I think peer tutoring is one of the best ways to help students learn, because sometimes, you know,
ma'am,
if they're getting it from someone else, they may not be as receptive. But if it's with a peer, I think that's, you know, they're pretty much receptive. And another thing,
yes,
we're going back when you first started, you went from interim head football coach to interim football coach to now head football coach. Now, what were your expectations, and how did the team adjust to you? And I know it can be difficult sometimes, you know, for change. So how did you,
yes, ma'am,
what were your expectations?
Well, I'm going to tell you the truth. You know, me being here 5 years already, you know, through that freshman recruiting class, those players been with me for 4 years. So I'm going on my fifth year now here. Really, you know, the team already knew who I was. They knew who I was about. And every single last one of them, I had a profile on for their academic success. So they had to see my butt every day. So it's just like, just to reiterate, you know, just from having them to see me every day, talk about academics every day, they already knew what it was about when they named me head coach. They were like, oh, Lord, they made coach head, you know, the head coach. I know I'm definitely going to go to class now if I want to play. So pretty much the guys love me, you know, like I said, because we talk about other things besides football, and it was just a great, you know, they loved it. They was looking for me to be the head coach maybe 2 or 3 years ago, you know, because, like I said, I could relate to them. I was a college player, and as, you know, like I said, there's other things besides football that those kids need to learn and need to talk about.
And I know your staff is very receptive, and they step in, I'm sure, and help out with you in that academic piece. So that's fantastic. So back to you, Mike.
Yeah, you know, Coach, I was just thinking, you're talking about, you know, the academics and everything. When I first started playing college ball, you know, I thought I was, you know, a pretty good hot shot. I was going to come in, you know, and of course, you know, the first thing that happens when you hit the college campus, and you know, parents out there, if you're listening, it's true, there's girls everywhere. Believe it or not, there's girls everywhere. So, you know, me being from a little bitty small town, Buttermilk Cross, and then all of a sudden here these girls, you know, they're actually wearing shoes. And, you know, you see here. Did I say that out loud? Oh,
we're not,
I'm sorry.
That country.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Mike.
We're
I'm
from
trying
the same
not to
place,
laugh, man.
I got to use my inner voice more. I'm sorry. Anyway. And so I wanted to go, you know, and I, you know, the coaches would get on you about different things, you know, and you listen to them, yeah. I'm grown now. Okay. All right. Well, I'll never forget this, Coach. Now, this is a lesson in parenting for all you young parents out there. You know, my mom was a school teacher. She was a school teacher for 33 years. My dad was a cop. Okay, I couldn't mess up in the street and couldn't mess up at school. I didn't have no way. I couldn't mess up at church. But anyway.
Best of both worlds,
you know,
baby.
Yeah, I know. And then I get up there, and so, you know, I was just messing around. Well, the coaches back in those days, they had their ways of getting to you. It's a little bit different now. You can't do the same things or say even the same things you used to. But one of the coaches, I believe this to my dying day, called my mother. Okay, my mother and my father drove up to Winston-Salem State University. Okay, my mother, I was in Brown Hall. Okay, 428. Never forget that room number because I saw it as I was laying on the floor. And my mother comes up to the door. She's only about what? Linda met my mother. She's only about what? 5'1", 5'2" at the most. She knocks on the door. Now I have a girl in the room. Not supposed to have a girl in the room, but you know,
Mike.
I know. You got to do that without getting caught. See, I was down at the end. Anyway, I'm not going to let the secrets of Brown Hall out. But anyway, and so I opened the door, and my mother was standing at the door. Okay? She didn't say one single word, not even to this day. She passed away in 1992, and she never said a word. From 1980 to 1992, she never said a word. All I remember hearing was this. You remember when a jet plane takes off? You hear it off in the distance going, and
right.
I heard something getting louder and louder and louder, and I forgot she was a left-hander. And next thing I know, I get hit with a left hand that would make Joe Frazier smile. Okay, literally, she had to have left the floor to reach my chin, literally. She had to have left the floor. Okay. I took that one smack, and that's why I still have brain damage now. And she never said a word. She just looked at me. And then she turned on her heels. Now, they drove 3 hours to get there. She whirled on her heels, went right back down the steps, and I'm standing in the doorway still trying to get myself together.
Wow.
But I understood exactly what it was for. They did not send me to school to screw around. They sent me to school to get an education. If I wanted to play a little football on the side, it was all right with them. But the basic thing was to get that education. Now, ladies and gentlemen,
that's what it's about,
you have not lived until a 5'2" left-handed woman who has no propensity for violence at all, tears your head up, goes inside your head.
Look.
Now, that
I'm a witness.
Parents.
I think your mom and my mom was tag team back when they had WCW and WWF. They would have been tag team.
Well, I mean, slobber all over the wall. I believe she slapped my mouth dry. God. And then, you know, my dad, I finally got a hold of my dad. I said, why didn't you tell me? He said, do you think I was going to get some of what you got? No. When she got out of the car and left her pocketbook in the car, and all I heard was heels clicking up that walkway, I won't get out of the car. No, I ain't had nothing to do with it. And so that was that. And that's the parenting. And see, and that's the way coaches were back in the day. I love those throwback coaches that really take the kid in, under their wing. One thing about an HBCU coach, and you can speak on this, is you have to wear many hats as an HBCU coach because you have so many issues that come before you. A lot of kids that come to you are rough around the edges, and they need that fatherly discipline. When they get there, you are the father figure. That's why they come back and say, Coach, thank you so much for what you did for me. Coach, thank you for being tough on me because you saw something in me. And now I realize that you were tough on me because you cared about me, not because you didn't like me. You liked me. You just were tough on me because you saw what I could do, but I couldn't see it myself, and you were trying to help me see it. Talk about how that feels to have some of those players come back and say, Coach, man, thank you for what you've done. Here's my wife. Here's my child. Here's my, you know what I'm saying? They bring their families back to see you. How does that feel?
Right. Mike, you hit it on the head, man. I'm going to tell you, that's what I strive for. That's pretty much how I grew up, the old school way, having that hands-on with my head coach in my face and being able to call my mom, you know, on the first down. And that's where I get it from, Mike. I'm here to tell you, you know, I'm going to my 14th year, and like I said, you know, under my academic success, you know, I'm over 90% of graduation rate for my football players graduating on time. You know, and that's a blessing. That's what drives me every year to wake up out of my bed and say, you know what, I'm going to make a difference for this next group of kids that's coming in every year. You know, every year. It's going to be hard for me to retire, Mike, because that's what helps you. I'm going to tell you, that's what drives you when you have alumni kids that you don't coach for 4 years come back and say, Coach, you know, I hear you're struggling. You know, here's $2,000 from our program to try to help this program out, or we want to donate it to the school. That's just a blessing, and that's what I do it for. You know, I do it for those guys to come back, and it builds strength in my heart. You know, that's what I do it for, Mike.
Yeah, I can understand. I mean, some days when you're totally down and you lost a big game and people everywhere are kicking you, not understanding what the situation is, but they're kicking you in the teeth, and all of a sudden you look up and in your office walks one of your ex-players with his kid. And they say, hey,
man,
coach, how you doing? Doesn't it do something to you? Doesn't it just make you feel so proud?
You're not even thinking about none of the losses. You know, you're not thinking about the loss. You're just thinking about the success that you gave that kid and his 4 years experience up under your wing where he is now. You know, and like you say, you know, like I said, that what keeps me going. You know, that's what keeps me not thinking about the wins and the losses, but just yet about, you know, I got another educated black man out of college, and he's doing well for his family, and he's able to give back.
Yes, sir. He's got that paper in his hand. Lord have mercy. Thank you so
much.
He's got that paper in his hand. That is what counts. That is what it's all about. That's why you're out there in the middle of the heat. Yeah, that's a little work that has to go into. Oh, yeah, you got to put some sweat equity into it. But when you
get it,
it's yours. It is yours, and nobody, and I mean nobody, can take it away from you. Well, Coach, thank you so much for appearing on the Overtime Sports Show. It's been a pleasure to talk with you. I tell you what, I can't wait to get you back on during the season. I know you got a tough opener. I think you got North Carolina A&T.
Yes, sir.
You know, it's going to be tough this year to pick to win the MEAC, and I think it's high as number 12 in the FBCS poll, poll, I should say. And so it's going to be a tough opener, but it's not an unwinnable opener. I hope people understand that. That's why we play the game. We just don't do it on paper. We did it on paper. Hell, all of us would be national champions, but you got to do it on the field. But anyway, Coach, thank you so much for appearing on the Overtime Sports Show, and hopefully we'll get you back on during the season, okay?
Mike, I had a great time, man, and I hope you guys just let me do another show with you. It's a blessing, man, and I appreciate your support and everything.
Hey, no problem, Coach. You got it. Thank you so much.
Have a good season.
Okay, take care, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, take care.
All right. That was Coach Tim Chambers, the head coach at St. Augustine's University in Raleigh, North Carolina, as he gets ready to go into the very tough CIAA this year. And it's going to be a rock'em sock'em. Five new coaches, count them now, five new coaches in the CIAA. So it's going to be a wide open, fun time in the CIAA. Don't forget now, coming up tomorrow night, later we have Odetta Johnson. She is the chief of police at North Carolina Central. And tomorrow night is going to be dedicated totally to this mess that's going on around the country right now. I mean, we got problems in the country, and we need to solve them. I mean, we have 17-year-old kids making phone calls to 911 to set up cops to come to a location to shoot them. That just came out today. There are people just doing all kinds of things. Now, I'm not going to say it's wrong on both sides. It's wrong to kill innocent people, and it's wrong to shoot innocent police officers because they've done nothing to you. Okay, so it's wrong to shoot innocent police officers, but we've got to find a common ground, I mean, you know, in order to make this thing work. I mean, we've got to do it because, you know, having war on each other is not going to work. I mean, I hear people all the time say, well, you know, if you do this or you do that, but let's just be realistic about it. I think in Durham, North Carolina, there's 495 sworn officers. Don't hold me to that, but I think that's what it is. I'll look up the actual number, like around 400. Hell, it was 800. It wouldn't make any difference. And you have almost a million people. So if a million people did not want to be controlled by 800 officers, it wouldn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to figure a way to work together between the police department and the citizens. I don't care what police department it is. They don't outnumber the citizens. And if you don't outnumber somebody, you're not going to win. I don't care if you can say, I have guns, I have this, I have that. Well, they have more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need to all come together for the common good. How about that?
You a good segue there. Yeah, we all need to come together for the common good to make sure this thing works. I don't want my son to have to be worried about being stopped by a police officer and being shot just because he's getting out of his driver's license. I don't want myself to have to worry about being shot. I'm an old man being roughed up because some 21-year-old kid who was a little wimp in school and now got a badge thinks that he's got some kind of power. So it's got to be – when I took criminal justice courses way back in the 80s, I used to ask the same question in class. I'll give a perfect example. When the Durham Public Safety Department at the time, what police department, it was both fire and police then, would send in police officers or officers to McDougal Terrace, they sent in eight cars. Whereas if they would send an officer into Coal Mill Road, they would only send one car. And I would ask why. And they would say, well, because there's more crime in McDougal Terrace. I said, the only reason there's more crime in McDougal Terrace is because you have more officers in McDougal Terrace. If you had the same number of officers answer calls at Coal Mill Road, you find eight times the crime like you do at McDougal Terrace.
Exactly.
It, you know, to sit there and say that it's less crime over here and more crime over there, well, it depends on where your resources are. If you put 100 officers over here, they're 100 more times likely to find a crime than the one officer that covers 20 square miles. So you can't say there's more crime here or more crime there because the numbers are skewed. And, yes, I don't care what people say about data. You can make data say anything you want to say depending on who's paying for it. But anyway, we'll talk about that tomorrow night here on the Overtime Sports Show. Like I said, tomorrow night, no sports. It's going to be strictly community. It's going to be strictly learning how to work together. So until tomorrow night, Linda, at 6:30, hang in there. Get some questions all lined up because I know there's people in the community that want to ask questions too and get some of those. And we'll throw them to the chief tomorrow right here on the Overtime Sports Show. So until tomorrow, goodbye, everybody.
See ya.